Hello, everyone. This is Nina from the Loose Lips cast, and I am proud to present to you with episode 2, in which I interview Yoo-Soo Kim of Good Son, previously also known as the vocalist for Hemmingbird. I hope you guys really enjoy episode 2. I know it's been a while. A lot of stuff happened, but I'm so happy and grateful that you guys decided to stick around, and I hope you continue to do. And as always, please reach out to me if I ever got any factual information incorrect during my podcast. I'm still working on it, and I hope you guys really enjoy this. So, let's start. We are on. Okay, cool. We're cool. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Let's see. I made some tea. You have your water.
I got my water.
And yeah. I'm just excited. I know I shouldn't talk about me for an interview about you.
That's
a podcast. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be selfish.
Every podcast I've listened to, the host talks like just as much as the guest. So talk away.
I like how you're just like narrowizing as you're like sipping your cup. No, I'm kidding. But like, no, so I'm just really excited because this is episode 2.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Long time in the making.
It was a long time in the making. No, last year, for people who aren't aware, I did an interview with Lily Cho, and she is a punk rock musician in the city with Chicken Happen. So I'm not sure if you've probably known of her or have, like, been through, like, her shows. But she's also, I think she's, like, her band, I think, is, like, no! I shouldn't say it's small because it's been around for a while, but it is in the local scene.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. Okay, so first, I guess the first thing I would, and what's your pronouns?
I just do he, him.
Okay.
How about yourself?
I do she, her, or they, them, because this always changes, so I don't care. I have no preference over the other.
Okay.
And then, so this was the same question I asked earlier, but I want to get it solidified in my head. So what's the pronunciation of your first name?
Yoo-Soo.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Excellent. All right. So what's your favorite color and why?
That's a very interesting question. I don't have a strong opinion about colors. So,
why?
I love all colors. I mean, I love most colors. And I think it also depends on, like, the type of color. Like, there are types of blues I don't like, and there's types of blues I do like. So, I wear a lot of, like, darker faded green, so maybe that's my favorite color, but even then, it's not like I have this, like, burning passion for green. It's just like I happen to choose green all the time.
I can tell because, like, you're wearing a green shirt now.
Is it green?
I think it's green. Blue. And you know what, though? This is a shitty lighting, so it's probably blue, but, like, I don't know if this is true, and maybe our audience could correct me if people see, like, a teeny bit different shades than other people. So it's possible you're seeing that blue and I'm seeing that green.
Yeah, I don't know. That would kind of blow my mind if so. Like, how do you even come to an agreement on things?
I think it's, like, the hue. I think that's, like, the color's the same, it's the hue that's different. So,
yeah.
But I don't know, like, because in my major, I study both psychology and rehab psychology. That is like understanding brain development and understanding disability sciences and psych science. I love it. I love it so much. But I like the dark greens. The dark greens are good. Okay, what artist and musician have you been listening to lately?
Constantly is changing.
What about the last 2 weeks?
So the last 2 weeks, the 1975 has put out a couple of singles.
Okay.
And I love their music a lot, and they're very inspiring for me because they kind of just do what they want to do, and it still sounds good and cohesive. So I've been really into them. I just listened to the new Beyonce record. I gotta listen to it a few more times.
Okay.
It's basically like a giant DJ set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty insane that she will go away for like 5 years and come back and can consistently make groundbreaking music.
Yeah.
So I've been checking that out. And that's been pretty cool.
That's so cool. No, I went to 2 Beyonce concerts.
What?
I did. Yeah, no, I went to 2 Beyonce concerts when I was like a child, when I was 17 years old, with the same friend, Sabina. And so...
Where'd you see her at?
At the Soldier Field Stadium.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was huge. It was the... I think it was their Lemonade tour. Speaking of pop stars, I also saw Justin Timberlake before. Wow. I knew he was a little bit trash. But I think, like, most stars are kind of trash.
Yeah, I mean, I partially feel like you had to burn some people to get to that level.
I think so. And then I think when you're a kid, you don't really focus on, like, the ethics of, like, a singer. You mostly focus just on the talent. Oh, my God. Something that's a little bit insane is that I had to talk to, like, my students why R. Kelly was, like, a bad person. Because the...
Where to begin?
I know! Where... No! And the thing is, it's, like... I think it's just because they're kids and they're immature, but I think they perceived R. Kelly as always just being an ongoing joke rather than, no, this man seriously hurted people, particularly in Chicago. And I always have to explain that with my students because it's weird. He's a meme to the teenagers, but he's not something taken seriously, which he should be taken seriously for, like, the terrible crimes he's done.
So. I mean, I don't think teenagers can always fathom the things that he's done. Like, you can say the stuff that he's did, but you can't always wrap your head around it until you get a little bit older and you're like, wow, that's actually, like, really fucked up what he did.
Right. Yeah. For example, like, okay, I can see me being, like, a shitty teenager and me thinking that, oh, young girls getting kidnapped in the South Side and being taken to a studio and locked up, that shit's fucking hilarious when it's that. But I can see myself as a teen being like, hee, what? So, I guess I give them a little bit of grace, but no.
Yeah, their brains aren't fully developed.
They're not, so... What's one thing you love about the city? I'll give you some time, because this is always a hard question.
One thing I love about the city... I just went to New York a couple weeks ago. And when I used to go to New York when I was younger, I was so enamored by it. Because there's so much happening, and it's so dense, and there's so much history. You can, at any hour, find something interesting to do. And then the last time I went, I was like, man, it just smells so bad, and there's no nature, and I feel a little claustrophobic. I just feel grimy all the time.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate for Chicago that it's kind of like a Goldilocks city. It's got, like, the metropolis, but it's not crazy dense. You can get some density if you want, depending where you live. Mm-hmm. And there's nature everywhere. Like, at least we try to have trees and lawns and grass. There is just, like, straight up concrete for miles and fucking caked with, like, dog shit everywhere. So I love New York, but I know now that I don't want to live there. I love Chicago because it's clean and it gives me a little bit of taste of being a city person.
You know, that's exactly how, like, I, because my mom also feels the same way. Like, she would never move to, like, Los Angeles or New York City for that same reason. It's interesting because I grew up in Irving Park. And growing up, I don't always realize, like, how much nature there is around me. Then when you go, like, beyond Chicago, you realize, like, oh, we actually have quite a bit of greenery. It is like a fairy tale. Like, for example, I went to UW-Madison, and Madison is a small city, and it has a lot of greenery.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful nature-wise, but it's, like, very much not as dense and in a grid system as Chicago. And that's what I miss, because everything was still far away. Even though it was claimed to be a city, everything was so far away. And the buses were trash. And so...
Oh, really? Yeah, for a university?
They were bad. Yeah, no. And just, like, everything was not close by. Everything was still in a loop. Nothing was in a grid system. And, like, I think what I like about Chicago is, like, best of both worlds. Because we're technically native swampland, and which is why we have, like, beautiful, beautiful trees. But we don't have the heat of a swamp. And... Also, we'll suffer this summer.
Which is not as bad as, like... I just learned that Austin is a swamp.
Exactly, right.
And I had gone there recently, and I was like, man, it's just so hot all the time.
Right, and so, like, no, and that just, like, proves our point where it's, like, it's very idyllic here with having the best of both worlds. Like, it's literally, like, the Pokemon universe, where you can have, like... like, literally, it's, like, you have this nice town, this nice, like, brick gothic town, and then, like... patches of grass everywhere. I love it. And, like, and yet you can walk. And I think what I love about Chicago is that you can, and you probably feel the same way. You can walk through that nature because there's fucking sidewalks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need like a car. You don't need all the time a bike. Like, you can literally walk through the scenery than just like be a pacifier. And yeah. I love that about the city as well.
And you are probably going to be near a park within like 5 or 10 minutes walk.
Oh, I always tell people when I visit outside of the city, I always tell them, like, we don't have large parks. We have boulevards, which I personally think are just as big as, like, large parks because they stretch on for neighborhoods. Like, you see here in Humboldt Park, like, it's very green and lush. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, a big centralized park, like, let's say Central Park, but it stretches. It stretches from northern Humboldt Park to, like, West Logan. And
yeah, it's huge.
It's huge. So, I really, really like that as well. So I totally agree with you 1001% about the nature. It's lovely. Now that we're done with the icebreaker, well, this is serious stuff. Well, I like how, like, I'm trying to make the icebreaker questions.
No, I appreciate those. Yeah.
Like, but I'm trying to make them relate to the music scene and like you. So I think number 4 is going to do that. I know that Lincolnwood is relatively close to Chicago, which is where you're from. You were born and raised in Lincolnwood. But what motivated you to move into the city?
I always wanted to move into the city. I was always fascinated by it. Anything I wanted to do, I ended up in the city. If I wanted to hang out with my friends, I was in the city. If I wanted to watch a show, it's in the city. Eat at a cool restaurant, it's in the city.
And you said it was 10 minutes away from...
I mean, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, it's right by like Rogers Park. It's one of the neighboring suburbs of Chicago. So I still live close to there where my parents are, and I'm like a 15-minute drive from my parents. So that's kind of handy. But the proximity is great from Lincolnwood to the city.
Did you have a car in your childhood to like travel back and forth the city, or did you use like public transportation or a bike?
Oh, I had a car when I was 17, I think.
Okay.
But I didn't always go in the city because it was still like, it was still sometimes a bit of a trek, and my parents weren't always like crazy about the idea of me going into the city.
Did you have strict parents?
What's that?
Did you have strict parents?
It's funny now because I think they were fine. Like, they're strict about certain things, and then they kind of relented over the years.
Okay.
But I'm a guardian to my 17-year-old cousin now.
Excellent.
And she is calling me out for being strict. I'm like, I'm not that strict. I'm trying to be, like, relatively generous with you here. I think part of the idea is, like, when you're a teenager, you are naturally kind of trying to push the limits. So you can't set, in my opinion, like, fair limits. But then they're always going to test the boundaries of that.
Yeah. No, that is accurate. That is 100% accurate. And it's a weird phenomena of like, I had a relatively strict mom growing up. And the weird thing is like when I try to instill like modeled behaviors or kind of a role model to like my students, I have to like make sure like I'm not pushing it to the envelope too far because some of my students get very sensitive when I get too strict. Mm. Oh my God. I remember when I had students like just flip out when I assigned them homework. It was insane.
Wow.
Yeah, no. Or just like each generation is going to have a different experience in the way that in which they grow up, which is not necessarily going to be the same as the past generation, which is fine. So.
Yeah. And I think at the same time, like, people need structure.
Yeah.
As crappy as it may feel sometimes, I think in hindsight, structure is good. Otherwise, you kind of end up being lost a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You fall apart. No, I definitely agree with you. I did. So you were essentially grew up in Lincolnwood, relatively in high school. You went back and forth to like socialize in the city. So like what settled you to be like, okay, this is my home. This is where I want to live. When did that
in the city?
Yeah. When did that start?
I don't know. I wasn't ready to live in the suburbs. I mean, initially when I was younger, I was like, I never want to live in the suburbs. Like, I'm going to be a city person because the city is more interesting and I love everything in the city. And now the older I get, I'm like, well, the suburbs don't seem so bad. Like,
okay.
I would like to have a big yard, and like, I don't even go out as much as I used to anymore. My body can't handle partying every weekend. So I'm not gonna do that. I'm just gonna hang out at home. And if I'm gonna hang out at home, then maybe I want some more space and I'll be in the suburbs. But for now, like, I think because it just always was compelling to me to be in the city because there's so much cool stuff happening all the time. But I'm willing to make the trade-off now.
Okay. No, that's an important realization. So speaking of you growing up in Lincolnwood, I know in past interviews, particularly in WEBZ, you discussed sort of like your family was very musically intelligent and very open to different musical talents. So you have a lot of musical talents from guitar to Korean folk music to electronic mixers. Which is your favorite, part one, and which one are you trying to get better at it? So which type of music?
That's a great question. I am always changing. I'm always trying to be a better, I think, maybe musician, because in terms of playing instruments, so much of what I do now is music production.
I noticed that.
My day is literally like sitting in front of a computer recording instruments, but then recording instruments versus playing instruments is very different.
Yeah.
Like, if I need to play something hard, then I just record that one part and then I can move on, or I can somehow finagle it with production. But that doesn't always make you a better musician. And then I don't play instruments as long as I used to because so much of my time is spent like editing and engineering. So I kind of miss the days where I would just spend hours playing instruments, running practices and different rudiments to become more technically proficient. Like, I miss that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had the time, I would just be practicing, whether it's like guitar, piano, or drums or something, just to be like a better musician.
Yeah, I applaud people who are able to have the patience to edit audio material.
That's fun for me.
Like, my, like, little bitty podcast, like, I get so annoyed, like, 15... Like, my first episode was like, let me submit it, like, right now. Like, after, like, an hour, I was just like, this is daunting. This is so boring. This is so tedious. Ugh. So I applaud you for doing that.
Thank you.
And it's interesting how, like, you know, you said you were starting to sort of miss the, like, playing music and practicing it versus music production. Do you see yourself kind of going back to being like a band musician or a genre musician versus just editing, production, and media?
I mean, I think.
Or you don't know.
I think people have a tendency, or maybe I have a tendency, where they're like a pendulum. At least I've heard this about people. You swing far in one direction and then you kind of want to go back the other direction.
Okay.
So now that I've dived very deep into production, I kind of sometimes just want to play in a band. Because it's nice and liberating to just play music with people, especially after the pandemic. I think the one thing like I craved right away was playing with people.
Yeah.
And so I would like to do that because I don't do it as much. And then you end up kind of romanticizing the parts of it that you miss because you're not doing it as often. So maybe, I don't know.
No, I get it. I think that makes total sense. Like, I'm the same way too, where with writing, where it's like I know during my college experience, like free write for like 4 years, 5 years. And now I'm like, oh, I'm going to go back to the swing of it because I miss it. So mm-hmm. I definitely empathize with you and where you're coming from. I don't think that's like inconsistent at all.
I mean, I think the hardest part is with a band when you're older is you have to get people to play with you.
Yeah, relationship building.
Yeah, and it's harder to build relationships when other people have a lot of stuff going on in their lives. When I was in my 20s, it was a lot easier to dick around, which mm-hmm. I did, with friends because they're also kind of figuring themselves out.
Yeah.
And then you can say like, hey, you want to do a band practice twice a week? Then everyone's like, okay, that's fine, because they don't have a ton of stuff going on.
Right.
And so it's like a very easy way to cultivate and build a band. But like now I'm in my 30s and it's way more of a challenge. Like, we have to look at our calendars and book months out. And
oh my God, it's a challenge even just being 24. Because like I have like a lot of friends who are like doing big things, which is great. It's just like nobody can act like an early 20-year-old. Like everybody's calendar is booked. It's insane. Jeez. But yeah, no, I... That's really cool. No, I think that's super, super awesome. I'm very, very interested in your production career because when I think of production, I think of movies. Like, that's what I personally think of, or music videos. So, like, what do you do specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a mystical term and a very broad-reaching idea. I guess a movie producer is very different from a music producer. Mm-hmm. I basically, on my own, am creating music from scratch. So I'll record the instruments and then decide what kind of song it's going to be, how to arrange it, build out melodies, and then mix it and master it, and then release it for whatever usage it may be. For other producers, it could be different. Like, there can be a separate engineer, or a band will approach a producer and they'll need creative feedback to be like, we don't know what we want to sound like, or we need help taking things to the next step. Can you be someone who can creatively guide us in that direction?
Okay.
And that's generally what the concept of a music producer is.
That's so cool. I didn't know that. I feel like I've been using the word music producer wrong for a while, but I'm happy to clarify on that. That's so cool.
I played music for a long time, and I think after about 15 years, I kind of grasped the idea of what a producer is. Yeah. Initially, when I started recording with bands when I was younger, I was like, what is a music producer? Like, why do we even need a producer? But if you're in a band and you're making creative decisions of what your music's going to sound like, you are producing yourself.
Okay.
And that was a thing that, like, I didn't fully get until a long time.
I feel like that's been very recent in, like, the freelance movement, or, like, the more anti-capital kind of model of being an artist, of, like... There's a lot of artists, like, I think in the early, coming into the early 2020s where they're starting to try to take more ownership and more authority and, like, what they say can and can't happen versus just a big corporation. So I think that's really cool. I think that's really cool what you're doing. That much I know about production of, like, it's, if an individual entity or band, like, produces their own music, it's a little bit more agency. And I think that's super fucking rad. It's awesome.
Yeah, it can be, definitely. It can be limiting too, because sometimes you don't know what you want or you don't know how to get to where you want to be.
Right.
And in that case, working with someone else helps. And it's not necessarily like capitalistic to work with a producer. Like, you could have like a friend be like, hey, can you produce my music?
Whereas I like that.
It's more collaborative than it is someone kind of dictating what you should sound like.
Okay. Oh, I like that. No, that's a better spin on it. I like how you mentioned that. What are you trying to... Well, you did mention that. You're trying to get better with, like, getting back to the swing of, like, playing instruments.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're trying to do. Okay. And then this one's going to take a little bit of a turn.
Okay. But, I'm ready.
Okay, you're ready? I'm ready, too. You mentioned that you grew up with people microaggressing your name in Lincolnwood. Have microaggressions changed within your life? Probably not, because I've mispronounced your name. Do you feel they have gotten better or worse or the same? How... And how does it manifest at all in the music scene? So you can answer that however way you want.
I mean, I don't think you should feel bad that you initially mispronounced my name, because, like, how would you have known otherwise what my name is pronounced? Like, and your intentions were good.
Yeah, but also I'm a bitter person. I get really mad when people don't pronounce my name, which is why I'm really mad. Because I'm a really bitter...
I think, when I was younger, kids would just make fun of me, because it's Yusu, and they're like, are you going to sue me? And... Now I think that's so dumb. That's but as a kid, you're like, no, shut up.
No, that's so weird. It's still like, I feel like if I was in that situation, I'd be like, shut the fuck up. Go burn.
Yeah. Well, instead of being angry, I would be angry and I would be crying.
Oh.
And now, though, it's kind of very cool to have unique name.
Yeah.
If I had my name 20 years later, then it would not be a problem and it would work out to my benefit. Because people would be like, that's such an interesting name now. But back then, they'd be like, Yusu, what kind of name is that?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've dealt with it and I've compartmentalized it in some ways where I just don't let it bother me. I guess that's my way of managing that.
I'm the same way with my name now. Like, when I was younger, I used to be really, just a little bit, but, like, really defensive about, like, the pronunciation of my name. Because, like, I go by Nina for English speakers and Carolina for Spanish speakers. So when I went to college, it was my first time being surrounded by like an all-white campus. Yeah, because I grew up in
Madison, Wisconsin.
Right. And so like, I was like, so many people just don't know my name. And so like, I was so upset. But then like, after a while, I chilled, I matured. And then I also did the same with you, like compartmentalizing that some people just don't, like, genuinely don't know. Some people even have linguistic barriers.
They can't hear the difference.
They can't hear the difference, that too. And so, like, so I'm more flexible about it as well.
Yeah. We had one music video shoot for my old band, Hemmingbirds.
Yeah.
And the director, the whole day of the shoot, kept calling me Yoso.
Oh, no.
And then finally, one day, in the afternoon in the car, my bandmates were like, hey, man, it's pronounced Yusu.
Yeah.
I know, like, it didn't bother me, but we all thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. This
is the director of our video, and, like, we had already met a few times, but it's all right. He was a nice dude.
Oh, my God. That, you know what? That, I'm laughing because that was almost going to be me today. Lamau.
Oh, that's all right.
But no.
I mean, like, you mentioned the thing about how Spanish is so much different than, like, Asian languages.
Right. No, the phonics in that is, like, so different, the pronunciation. So I guess this kind of seeps into the other question, like, what has changed, you think, since your time being a musician, before you became, like, a producer?
Mm-hmm.
Has it become more inclusive or more, like, of you and who you are and your community versus it just being, like, monolithic? How has that changed?
It's so hard to say because I haven't been as involved in the Chicago music scene since my last band broke up, and that was in 2016.
Right. It was a while ago.
And then, like, at that point, we were pretty in it. But even then, like, there's so many different sects of...
What about Good Son?
Good Son, I'm trying to work my way back in. And I do think that there is more inclusivity. I would like to hope so. There's just so much music now, and there's so many ways for people to listen to it and create music. I think 15 years ago, like, if I made the music I made, people would be like, you're selling out because you're not making rock music. You're not, like, recording live guitars the way that you're supposed to be doing. There are so many hard and fast rules that they live by. And I think a lot of that has been broken now.
Yeah.
So I'd like to believe that there's more inclusiveness because so many rules have been broken, and anyone who kind of is a naysayer to those rule breakers, they just kind of get left in the dust.
Yeah. I definitely 100% agree with you because me and Lily were talking about that in my first episode of just how, like, alt or rock or indie, they're starting to become, like, break the barriers of what we think of as, like, traditional, let's say, rock genre or traditional rap genres or just traditional genres from their roots. And then things are starting to either blend with one another or things are branching to, like, another subgenre, or things are starting to, like, just, like, be more accessible with streaming. And so I think that's really exciting, and I think you're right, and I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess going back to, like, your Korean upbringing and your musical upbringing, I'm curious to know if there are Korean or Korean American communities that are involved in, like, the art movement. So I was thinking of this question in terms of, like, music, but I'm open really to, like, any sort of art now that I'm looking at this question. So, you have any shout outs or you know anything in the Korean American scene in Chicago?
There's this one community center called Hana Center.
Okay.
That I think is doing a lot of great just humanitarian work.
What are they doing?
They'll take funding and try to help undocumented Korean immigrants stay in the U.S. or provide resources for low-income Koreans or any people for that matter. Like, my mom would go there to learn English classes, I think.
Okay.
So it's stuff like that, providing resources for Koreans in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll also host, like, art events.
Very cool.
And in terms of Korean Americans in arts or the music scene, it's sort of hard, I think, because there's not many of us.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the past.
and we don't always make the same kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll, if we know each other, we'll root for each other. But I don't always like connect with the music that other people are making.
Yeah.
And then so I guess from that way, it's kind of hard to make a community. And I think even the idea of forming a community as Asian Americans didn't become a thing until like 5 years ago. I almost want to place my finger on when Crazy Rich Asians came out, and it was this huge movie about Asian people.
Yeah.
And we're like, wait, like this could happen and we can band together and like support each other. Cause I don't know what other ethnic communities are like, but man, Koreans can really try to fuck over other Koreans.
Yeah.
And they're not always supportive of arts, or even if there's like a Korean festival, there'll be sabotage happening inside, or there's just a lot of power dynamic issues, so...
Yeah. No, you mentioned that. You mentioned in your last interview about how there wasn't a lot of, like, at your time, in your scene, like, a lot of Asian American, or let alone Korean American musicians, just, like, you were kind of, like, your own little island for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be, like, people here and there. I remember I played a show in Columbus once, and then I saw a Korean guy there, and then I think we both had the same reaction of, like, this dude's Korean. And then, so we just said hi to each other, and we ended up becoming friends, and he plays in a different band called Connections in Ohio. Yeah, so I guess there is a certain degree of rarity of when you see someone else, you're like, oh, my God, this guy's also Korean.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I had that... I don't have that experience anymore. I had that in university, though. Mm. When I look at somebody who was, like, Hispanic, I was just like, oh, they're Hispanic. I hope they're Mexican. I hope they're anybody. Anybody, really. And so, no, I totally get you. And, you know, I agree with you. Where I think the idea of, like, an Asian or pan-Asian community didn't start, like, a liberated community didn't start in, like, the mainstream formidable mind until, like, Crazy Rich Asians, and then we had, like, this is gonna sound really limiting, so you can call me out, but, like, I feel like Ali Wong was just, like, the forerunner of, like, Asian comedy, like, Asian female comedy, because she's so great. She had that movie, You'll Always Be My Maybe. No, like, and I agree with you, where I don't think it started becoming mainstream of, like, Asian identities being diverse, and let alone Korean identities, because I still can't really list, like, off the top of my head. Well, except for Bong Joon-ho, I think, who he created Parasite. He was pretty monumental in that, like, movement. But it does track where it's, like, we haven't seen that formate yet. And then
I mean, I think there's pockets of it here that happened here and there. Like, there were comics in the 90s. Like,
right.
Bobby Lee was on MAB TV. And I forgot this other female comic. But it was people here and there. Like, James Iha was in Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
And it was that would be pretty incredible. But now it's like crazy huge what Korean culture means to the world.
Right.
Like BTS is one of the largest acts in the world. Parasite wins Best Picture. I mean, stuff like that is mind-blowing and would not have happened 20 years ago.
But now, it was the last 5 years.
Yeah, and now it's cool. Like so many of my friends will be like, we love watching K-dramas. And I'll be like, I don't watch K-pop.
I'm the same way with, like, K-pop. They're just like, oh my God, K-pop's amazing. And I'm just like, I'm done with, like, my boy band phase. I'm done. I'm good. So, no, I think that's great insight.
Thanks.
And speaking of, like, kind of genres and that diversity, like, you have quite a bit of genres you do. Like, I couldn't... Because typically what I do when I prep for a podcast is I try to listen to as much music as possible. Mm-hmm. You have so many different genres of music. You had, like, rap. You had, like, alt. You had,
like all my production music.
You had all your production music. And I was just like, what? I'm just wondering, well, you kind of also answered that, like, you're trying to get back to being, like, a musician. Have you landed on your favorite genre, though?
I don't think I have a favorite. I don't like picking favorites, because I change my mind so often, and my tastes change so often that I can't say, like, this thing is my favorite, especially with music, because it's so much of who I am and what I do.
Okay.
I have told some people that because I do production music for a living and I'm making all these different genres, I almost have like this Gary Oldman crisis where he lost his native accent because he played so many different roles.
Really? Oh, right. I always forget he's British.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. It's like, what music represents me? Like, what kind of music do I like making the most? And it's hard to say because I've done so many different genres.
That's just so funny to me because I love Gary Oldman as an actor. And it's like, am I Sid Vicious? Am I Sirius Black?
Yeah.
Who am I? Am I Gordon? Am I Officer Gordon? Who am I? So, like, I guess you're just trying to figure out who's your Gary Oldman character.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure it out.
No, and I hope you do, but if you enjoy not figuring it out, like, kudos to you. So, this kind of goes to, like, inspiration. So, you've mentioned Radiohead, like, quite a bit. I also really like Radiohead. But I noticed that, like, your alt music, especially your, even in Good Son, because I was avoiding listening to a lot of Hemingbird stuff just because, like, I wanted to more focus on you as an individual. And so, since I had that opportunity. But I did notice, like, your alt genre sounds a lot like The Strokes or Tokyo Police Club. And, like, was that purposeful or did that just, like, happen?
I totally love The Strokes. They're one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
Radiohead is too, but they're sort of more...
They're more grunge.
They can be, yeah. I mean, yeah. They got really weird with, like, Kid A and Amnesiac, and they had, like, electronic records.
Yeah.
And that was more of who I was, like, 15 years ago. And then since then, I've listened to way more pop music, and I love pop music a ton.
Me too.
So, I mean, The Strokes at heart, they're pop rock.
Yeah.
And Tokyo Police Club, I know they're huge singles. But I think so many bands try to model their sound after those singles came out because...
It was so good.
Yeah, it was just so polished and done really well.
No, the acoustics on Tokyo Police Club are, like, excellent. They're so excellent. Like, someone has, like, a good producer. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I think, like, The Strokes for sure. And nowadays, I mean, like I mentioned, I love the 1975.
Yeah.
Because they're still, like, a rock band, but they will put out, like, house tracks, or they'll put out 80s tracks, or they'll put tons of auto-tune on their vocals, or sing about contemporary things, and not all rock bands do that.
No, they don't. They're
kind of stuck from 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah. No, and I like that. Or, like, I find that, honestly, I gotta be honest with you, like, I think the only successful musician that comes to mind immediately who's done... Like, who's done successful transition in her music is Blondie. Like, she's the only person. Because, like, from the 1970s, it was, like, hardcore rock. And then now, like, she came out with more singles, and they're a lot more, poppy.
Really? I don't know that much about Blondie. I did not know Blondie made hardcore rock. That's insane.
That's, like, 1970s. So that was, like, her early stuff. Because she would be collaborating a lot with, like, Patti Smith. She would be collaborating a lot with Television. So that's when it was, like, more...
Oh, interesting.
That was when it was... And that's also when, like, hardcore was, like... Hardcore was actually, like, new wave, but nobody knew it was new wave because it was, like, the times.
So you're a big, like... 80s, 70s punk person.
I am. Okay. I really am. And so, but no, like, going, so, like, Debbie Harry, who's, like, the lead singer of Blondie, what I like about her is that, like, she, and I don't know if she does this in collaboration or by herself, I would be curious to know, but, like, I love how she is able to just, like, seamlessly adapt her music throughout the times without compromising. Like, she does that, like, her new, like, album, like, her most recent one, I think it came out a year ago. It's really good, and I recommend it. Because it's, like, it's still rock-like trends, but also poppy.
Yeah.
That was really good.
I mean, I think it's hard for any artist in general to even have... You, first of all, have to have a decades-long career to even then have someone under a microscope say, like, how did this person's career change? Sometimes they just have one leg of their career, and then that's it.
Right.
Very few artists, if ever, have, like, multiple legs... of their career that then you can analyze, especially female artists.
Yeah, for sure. No, and I agree. Like, it definitely takes some seniority and some work and some just, like, skin in the game. So, but I have hopes that you're going to have skin in the game. You already do. What the fuck am I talking about? Let's see. So, what makes you stay motivated? What makes you stay motivated in, like, the music scene and production scene in general? Like, is it a full-time job, or is it, like, a part-time gig? Or, like, where, like, how's it going?
How's it going? I do produce music full-time as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of music licensing, and I'll compose music for, like, commercials and shows. But that's very different from what I thought I would be in college.
Okay.
I think you don't even fully grasp what the music industry is like in college.
What did you want to be in college?
I wanted to be like a huge band. I wanted to go on tour and play festivals.
Oh, a K-pop band?
And not necessarily. Like, I would have wanted to be like a Radiohead in college or something.
Okay, yeah.
This like huge indie rock band or like a Fleet Foxes or what have you. But,
yeah.
It's so hard. You have to have so many people committed. You have to have a good amount of luck.
Yeah.
And then that was what like Hemmingbirds was supposed to be. It's like this band that we're trying to make it. And then as we were going through the band, we had put out 2 full lengths and an EP.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of burn out. Because we broke up when we were in our late 20s. And then that was like the peak of our success. We had a touring... a booking agent, we got a manager, we had a press guy, and we had a couple labels looking at us. And then once we actually started going in the motion of doing it, when you're not making a lot of money, but you're trying to upward your trajectory, then we're like, man, I don't know if this is sustainable, and it's not really fun. It mostly feels like a job that you're not making any money on. And then so we just broke up. But then I still wanted to figure out a way of like, how do I do this for a living?
Yeah.
So,
because you loved it, because I loved it.
And I think something that took me a long time to figure out is like, people don't love it the same way that I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to do music at any cost,
mm-hmm.
which isn't me like trying to flex or anything. It's more like, it's innately something that I have to do.
You have so much joy in it that you don't want to let go.
And I'm miserable if I don't do it. But for other people, like they have to have very specific terms on how they make music, and I didn't understand that for a long time.
I guess it's hard to find people like that, too, who also have that same joy and pleasure just to do it.
I mean, it's good and it's bad, because I have an all-or-nothing mentality. Like, when I started Good Son, it was because I wanted to make music that's fully who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started working on it, and I was like, well, if I'm not going to tour and if I'm not going to put out records and stuff, then, like, what's the point?
Right.
But the point is that you should be making music because you love music.
Right.
But I have a hard time separating that from, like, trying to make it as big as I can.
I mean, that's how I feel like, I empathize with you hardcore, because that's how I feel like as a special educator in a way, where it's like, I'm sure a lot of teachers feel that way, but I just haven't met them yet, but I freaking love it. Like, I love working with kids. I love understanding their weirdness and their capabilities and their challenges. Like, I love that, but I have in the past worked with others, not to say this was your experience, but I have in the past also like worked in a team, and they didn't seem to have that same like joy or like
passion
or not even passion, or just like that wasn't in their rule book or that wasn't in their like trajectory or plan. Like their plan, some of their plan was just like, oh, I'm just gonna do kind of XYZ and not really anything else unless it's a student approach me. And I was the opposite, where I'm like, I want to do everything, and I want to be there every time, and I want to be a resource to them all the time. Like, I just put my whole heart into it. So I totally get where it's like, it's really hard to like, I think, find others who have that same level of joy or that same level of like, not even passion. I don't even, because I think everybody's passionate, or just dedication. Yeah.
I mean, I sort of hit this existential crisis, too, like, over the past year, where...
No, who hasn't?
Yeah. What's that Pixar movie with the... Oh, Soul.
Soul.
It's, like, the kind of thing where he's, like, if I can just do this one gig and play with this one person, and I've totally made it, and then, like, my life is going to be complete.
Right.
And then he does it, and it's, like, what's next? And then, like, and I hit that, and I was, like, this can't be the only thing that I do, and I need to establish boundaries in my life, and I need to, like, figure out, like, what is... the purpose of my life if it's not going to be just completely making music all the time, because I don't think that's the thing that is necessarily most healthy for me.
Yeah. Oh my god, you just read my life. I don't want to go to therapy today.
Oh yeah, everyone I talk to feels like they're having this therapy session with me. I'm just like in this, I don't know.
No, it's real. It's fucking real. Like I think a lot, especially like our generation, like I know like I'm a generation younger than you, but like I just kind of clump like Gen Xers and like millennials together because we're all like emotional and dealing with the same like repercussions of older people. But like I do feel you where it's like I think especially with artists, it's this reckoning of like how can I, aside from supporting myself financially, like how can I also like continue to like live joyfully and continue to live like dedicated to my work without burning out, and also I don't want to be exhausted, but also I want to find community, and also I want to find people who are compatible with. So I think that's the vibes. That's like the general consensus I feel, and even within myself amongst like a lot of artists. So
yeah, I mean it's hard. I mean just the fact that you listed so many things, and then we desire all those things, and each one takes a lot of time and energy.
Yeah. No, it's hard. It's hard. And for people who are just like, oh, I'm walking in my job every single day, or like, and without any like thought to it, I feel like would be miserable. So since our time's almost up, I think it's a good question. What's your next big project? Like, what are you doing now?
Do you have anything in the works? I've been saying for like 2 years that I want to make an album, but I want to make an album. And, I think that I love the idea of an album because it's such a grand statement.
Yeah.
And it's such a cohesive idea. But it certainly takes a lot of time. And then the hard part, too, is like the idea of the album that you want to make from 2 years ago may be different than who you are now. Because you'd be like, I want to make an album that's like this. Which I had a very specific idea of like this kind of album that I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's like 2 years later and I'm like, am I still that person? And is that the kind of statement that I want to make?
Do you think the pandemic, like, changed that? Like, made you reevaluate?
I think the pandemic was the reason that I wanted to make an album like that. It's basically just, like, I've had a number of family members who have had mental health issues and a few that have committed suicide, and I wanted to tell them, like, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And I wanted compilations of songs saying, like, how they're not alone and what it's like to be depressed or anxious. And then I don't know if I want to make that sort of statement anymore. I like making happy pop songs, and I don't want to dwell in that stuff. But it is a good way for me to kind of exercise all that out.
Yeah.
So some days I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. And other days I'm like, yeah, totally. I got to finish this thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So whatever it may be, I want to do an album. I don't know how or when or what it might be like, but that's my big project that has a big question mark on it.
Yeah, and I think I don't fault you at all, like, or judge you at all for, like, changing your, like, kind of project here and now. Just because, like, A, it's your project, and B, also, I think that's, like, the journey of, like, finding things that, like, give us joy and also, like, make us feel whole. Like, it's gonna change all the time. Oh my god, like, speaking of mental health, I have mania. So, my mind is... as always changing. I told you earlier how, like, I kind of want to get my hunter's license. And I've never been hunting before. And so,
oh, interesting. But you lived in rural areas, you said.
I just for a little bit. And my grandfather, he is kind of like a very adventurous type. And he used to hunt, game, so.
What fascinates you about it?
I think just, like, I like soft things. So I just was seeing YouTube videos on how to pelt and skin. With small game, so like rabbits and squirrel, and I was just like, oh, that looks so soft. Like, like, I want that.
Interesting.
And so I thought, like, ooh, what can I do to like profit off of it, because like I'm trying to get the next big thing. And I think, like, oh, I can make cute earrings out of the fur and sell it to like the local like stores here and get commission. So I don't know, I bought like a $98 worth of like licensure instruction certification. So I think I'm gonna go through with it. Yeah. But like that goes back to say, like, continue finding things that, like, you know, bring you that joy and bring you that like peace, even if it takes a little bit, which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about the journey.
Yeah. But that's such a positive way to end it. So, all right. What socials do you have?
My main social is Instagram at I'm a Good Son. I'm on Facebook and technically I'm on Twitter, but not really. But just find me on Instagram at I am a Good Son and follow me on there for any updates on what I'm doing.
Excellent. So that was Yusu of Good Son, and thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.